Chapter 20. Kind of case where there is no use in drugs. He had just scribbled a prescription to quiet Miss Aaron. It's the cold, I suppose, Stanwell groaned. He ought to be shipped off to Florida. The doctor made a negative gesture. F Florida be hanged. What he wants is to sell his group. That would set him up quicker than sitting on the equator. Sell his group? Stanwell echoed. But he's so indifferent to recognition, he believes in himself so thoroughly. I thought at first he would be hard hit when the exhibition committee refused it, but he seems to regard that as another proof of its superiority. His visitor turned on him the penetrating eye of the confessor. Indifferent to recognition? He's eating his heart out for it. Can't you see that all that talk is just so much whistling to keep his courage up? The name of his disease is failure, and I can't write the prescription that will cure that complaint. But if somebody would come along and take a fancy to those two naked parties who are breaking each other's heads, we'd have Mr. Casper putting on a pound a day. The truth of this diagnosis became suddenly vivid to Stanwell. How dull of him not to have seen before that it was not cold or privation which was killing Casper, not anxiety for his sister's future, nor the ache of watching her daily struggle, but simply the cankering thought that he might die before he had made himself known. It was his vanity that was starving to death, and all Mungold's hampers could not appease that hunger. Stanwell was not shocked by the discovery. He was only the more sorry for the little man, who was, after all, denied that solace of self-sufficiency which his talk so noisily proclaimed. His lot seemed hard enough when Stanwell had pictured him as buoyed up by the scorn of public opinion. It became tragic if he was denied that support. The artist wondered if Kate had guessed her brother's secret, or if she were still the dupe of his stoicism. Stanwell was sure that the sculptor would take no one into his confidence, and least of all his sister, whose faith in his artistic independence was the chief prop of that tottering pose. Kate's penetration was not great, and Stanwell recalled the incredulous smile with which he had heard him defend poor Mungold's sincerity against Casper's assaults. But he had the insight of the heart, and where her brother's happiness was concerned, she might have seen deeper than any of them. It was this last consideration which took the strongest hold on Stanwell. He felt Casper's sufferings chiefly through the thought of his sister's possible disillusionment. Within 3 months, two events had set the studio building talking. Stanwell had painted a full-length portrait of Mrs. Archer Millington, and Casper Aaron had received an order to execute his group in marble. The name of the sculptor's patron had not been divulged. The order came through Shepson, who explained that an American customer living abroad, having seen a photograph of the group in one of the papers, had at once cabled home to secure it. He intended to bestow it on a public building in America, and not wishing to advertise his munificence, had preferred that even the sculptor should remain ignorant of his name. The group bought by an enlightened compatriot for the adornment of a civic building in his native land. There could hardly be a more complete vindication of unappreciated genius, and Casper made the most of the argument. He was not exultant, he was sublimely magnanimous. He had always said that he could afford to await the verdict of posterity, and his unknown patron's act clearly shadowed forth that impressive decision. Happily, it also found expression in a check which it would have taken more philosophy to await. The group was paid for in advance, and Kate's joy in her brother's recognition was deliciously mingled with the thrill of ordering him some new clothes, and coaxing him out to dine succulently at a neighboring restaurant. Casper flourished insufferably on this regime. He began to strike the attitude of the recognized great master, who gives advice and encouragement to the struggling neophyte. He held himself up as an example of the reward of disinterestedness, of the triumph of the artist who clings obstinately to his convictions. A man must believe in his star. Look at Napoleon. It's the dogged trust in one's convictions that tells it always ends, by forcing the public into line. Only be sure you make no concessions, don't give in to any of their humbug. An artist who listens to the critics is ruined, they never have any use for the poor devils who do what they tell them to. Run after fame, and she'll keep you running, but stay in your own corner, and do your own work, and by George, sir, she'll come crawling up to you, and ask to have her likeness done. These exhortations were chiefly directed to Stanwell, partly because the inmates of the other studios were apt to elude them, partly also because the rumors concerning Stanwell's portrait of Mrs. Millington had begun to disquiet the sculptor. At first he had taken a condescending interest in the fact of his friends receiving an order, and had admonished him not to lose the chance of howling up his sitter and her environment. It was a splendid opportunity for a fellow with a message to be introduced into the tents of the Philistine, and Stanwell was charged to drive a long sharp nail into the enemy's skull. But presently Aaron began to suspect that the portrait was not as comminatory as he could have wished. Mungold, the most kindly of rivals, let drop a word of injudicious praise. The picture, he said, promised to be delightfully in keeping with the decorations of the ballroom, and the lady's gown harmonized exquisitely with the window curtains. Stanwell, called to account by his monitor, reminded the latter that he himself had been selected by Mungold to do the cupids for Mrs. Millington's ballroom, and that the friendly artist's praise could, therefore, not be taken as positive evidence of incapacity. Ah, but I didn't do them, I kicked him out, Casper rejoined. And Stanwell could only plead that, even in the cause of art, one could hardly kick a lady. Ah, that's the worst of it. If the women get at you, you're lost. You're young, you're impressionable, you won't mind my saying that you're not built for a stoic, and hang it, they'll coddle you, they'll enervate you, they'll sentimentalize you, they'll make a Mungold of you. Ah, poor Mungold, Stanwell laughed. Ah, if he lived the life of an Anchorite, he couldn't help painting pictures that would please Mrs. Millington. Whereas you could, Kate interjected, raising her head from the ironing board where, sphinx-like, magnificent, she swung a splendid arm above her brother's shirts. Oh, well, perhaps I shan't please her, perhaps I shall elevate her taste. Casper directed a groan to his sister. Tee, that's what they all think at first, chilled Roland to the Dark Tower came. But inside the Dark Tower there's the Venusberg. Oh, I don't mean that you will be taken with truffles and plush footmen, like Mungold. But praise, my poor Ned, praise is a deadly drug. It's the absence of the artist, and they'll stupefy you with it. You'll wallow in the mire of success. Stanwell raised a protesting hand. Ah, really, for one order, you're a little lurid. One? Haven't you already had a dozen others? Only one other, so far, and I'm not sure I shall do that. Not sure, wavering already. That's the way the mischief begins. If the women get a fat for you, they'll work you like a galley slave. You'll have to do your round of copy every morning. What becomes of inspiration then? How are you going to loaf and invite the soul? Don't barter your birthright for a mess of pottage. Oh, I understand the temptation, I know the taste of money and success. But look at me, Stanwell. You know how long I had to wait for recognition. Well, now it's come to me, I don't mean to let it knock me off my feet. I don't mean to let myself be overworked. I have already made it known that I will not be bullied into taking more orders than I can do full justice to. And my sister is with me, God bless her. Kate would rather go on ironing my shirts in a garret than see me prostitute my art. Kate's glance radiantly confirmed this declaration of independence, and Stanwell, with his evasive laugh, asked her if, meanwhile, she should object to his investing a part of his ill-gotten gains in theater tickets for the party that evening. It appeared that Stanwell had also been paid in advance, and well paid. For he began to permit himself various mild distractions, in which he generally contrived to have the errand's share. It seemed perfectly natural to Kate that Casper's friends should spend their money for his recreation, And by one of the most touching sophistries of her sex, she thus reconciled herself to the anomaly of taking a little pleasure on her own account. Mungold was less often in the way, for as he had never been able to forgive him for proposing that Casper should do Mrs. Millington's Cupids, and for a few radiant weeks Stanwell had the undisputed enjoyment of her pride in her brother's achievement. Stanwell had ushed through Mrs. Millington's portrait in time for the opening of her new ballroom, and it was perhaps in return for this favor that she consented to let the picture be exhibited at a big portrait show which was held in April for the benefit of a fashionable charity. In Mrs. Millington's ballroom the picture had been seen, and approved only by the distinguished few who had access to that social sanctuary. But on the walls of the exhibition it became a center of comment and discussion. One of the immediate results of this publicity was a visit from Shepson, with two or three orders in his pocket, as he put it. He surveyed the studio with fresh disgust, asked Stanwell why he did not move, and was impressed, rather than downcast on learning that the painter had not decided whether he would take any more orders that spring. "You might have a studio at Newport," he suggested. "It would be rather new to do your sitters out of doors, with the sea behind them showing they had a blaze on the glyphs." The picture produced a different and less flattering effect on the critics. They gave it, indeed, more space than they had ever before accorded to the artist's efforts, but their estimate seemed to confirm Casper Aaron's forebodings, and Stanwell had perhaps never despised them so little as when he read their comments on his work. On the whole, however, neither praise nor blame disquieted him greatly. He was engrossed in the contemplation of Kate Aaron's happiness, and basking in the refracted warmth that shed about her. The doctor's prognostications had come true. Casper was putting on a pound a week, and had plunged into a fresh creation more symbolic and encumbering than the monument of which he had been so opportunely relieved. If there was any cloud on Stanwell's enjoyment of life, it was caused by the discovery that success had quadrupled Casper's artistic energies. Meanwhile, it was delightful to see Kate's joy in her brother's recovered capacity for work, and to listen to the axioms which, for Stanwell's guidance, she deduced from the example of Casper's heroic pursuit of the ideal. There was nothing repellent in Kate's borrowed didacticism, and if it sometimes bored Stanwell to hear her quote her brother, he was sure it would never bore him to be quoted by her himself, and there were moments when he felt he had nearly achieved that distinction. Casper was not addicted to the visiting of art exhibitions. He took little interest in any production save his own, and was moreover disposed to believe that good pictures, like clever criminals, are apt to go unhung. Stanwell therefore thought it unlikely that his portrait of Mrs. Millington would be seen by Kate, who was not given to independent explorations in the field of art. But one day, on entering the exhibition which he had hitherto rather nervously shunned, he saw the Aarons at the end of the gallery in which the portrait hung. They were not looking at it, they were moving away from it, and to Stanwell's quickened perceptions their attitude seemed almost that of flight. For a moment he thought of flying too, then a desperate resolve nerved him to meet them, and stemming the crowd, he made a circuit which brought him face to face with their retreat. The room in which they met was momentarily empty, and there was nothing to intervene between the shock of their interchanged glances. Casper was flushed and bristling. His little body quivered like a machine from which the steam has just been turned off. Kate lifted a stricken glance. Stanwell read in it the reflection of her brother's tirade, but she held out her hand in silence. For a moment Casper was silent too. Then, with a terrible smile, "My dear fellow, I congratulate you. Mungold will have to look to his laurels," he said. The shot delivered, he stalked away with his 7-league stride, and Kate moved tragically through the room in his wake. V. Shepson took up his hat with a despairing gesture. "Well, I give you up, he said. "Don't yet," protested Stanwell from the divan. It was winter again, and though the janitor had not forgotten the fire, the studio gave no other evidence of its master's increasing prosperity. If Stanwell spent his money, it was not upon himself. He leaned back against the wall, his hands in his pockets, a cigarette between his lips, while Shipson paced the dirty floor, or halted impatiently before an untouched canvas on the easel. "I tell you that it is, Mr. Stanwell, I can't make you out," he lamented. "Last winter you got a start, that vault have kept most men going for years. After making that hit with Mrs. Millington's picture, you could have painted half the town. And here you are sitting on your divan, and saying you can't make up your mind to take another order. Well, I can only say that, if you take much longer to make it up, you'll find some other chap has cut in, and got your job. Mrs. Van Orley has been waiting since last August, and she tells me, you haven't even answered her letter. How could I? I didn't know, if I wanted to paint her. My goodness. Don't you know, if you vant $3,000? Stanwell surveyed a cigarette. "And no, I'm not sure I do," he said. Shipson flung out his hands. "Ask more then, but do it quick," he exclaimed. Left to himself, Stanwell stood in silent contemplation of the canvas on which the dealer had riveted his reproachful gaze. It had Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.